Hey everyone, you're listening to Pixel Pixel, where the X is silent, but our love for spooky things most definitely isn't. This is episode 114, and I'm with you coming in hot with our new DJI mic minis. I'm Anne, of course, and with me as always is Marcus.
Hi.
Hi. So the big news, we got new
Oh my God.
mics. I guess, does this count as one mic or two mics?
Two.
Yeah, it's got two. This is a receiver.
No, I think that's the
Oh,
receiver.
so what is this?
These
A
are the we have two
transmitter.
mics. I don't know.
Transmitters, maybe. Anyway, I don't know what spurred this. Me being on the internet, saw somebody talking about them, and I was like, that's a cute thing. So it's a wireless mic transmitter. So you can plug it into, I think it's USB-C. You can also get like a, was it that old school Apple connection? It's really seems to be, I mean, you can use it for anything, but they seem to market it as a like, oh, connect it to your phone and record anywhere, all for all you vloggers out there. And I'm like, not really into that. But when I saw it, I thought, wow, the things we could do in our own home. We could be sitting on the couch recording podcasts, which
And
we're
we
do
are.
we literally are right now. It's very nice. So yes, it's wireless. You plug it in because it has USB-C. You can plug it into a laptop, computer, whatever. And there are two cute little transmitter nubbins, these little squares that have clips on them. Or you can use a magnet. So you can either clip it to your shirt or magnetize it to your shirt. And it comes with a couple windscreens and a cute little box to put everything in. And I love it. It's so fun. Well, hopefully everyone loves the audio quality, but this is as opposed to us sitting at the desk in your office with the, mic on the table. And ugh, that's so like 2022 or something. Right. I mean, you recorded with that mic forever, right? Since
Yeah.
we started.
I've had it a long time.
But yeah, there's, you were recording by yourself, and there's probably a little bit different when you have two people recording. We were kind of hunched over the one mic,
Yep.
and we were battling with a fan because your office is extremely hot in the afternoon because it gets that setting sun. Anyway, we're much more comfortable, and hopefully the audio is better. I mean, even if the audio is just the same, it's more comfortable. So, as long as it's not worse, we're
I
good.
don't think it's worse.
Oh, good. Anyway, so that's our fun news about the podcast. But for the intro, I mentioned spooky things. Obviously, it's the month of October, Halloween season. But in terms of other spooky things, you finished Silent Hill F, finally. Well, not finally, it didn't take you that long, honestly. 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Maybe 3 weeks.
Playing on the weekend, so not that bad. What was your total time for that first ending?
A little over 10 hours or something.
Okay. And I like how I'm acting like I don't know. I literally watch you play it. Anyway, I'm pretending to be the audience here. So you finished the first ending. It sounds like we really need to play multiple times to get that full story. But you want to share some brief spoiler-free thoughts. And now I know normally we would talk about this in the gaming section, but this all ties into something else we did, so I wanted to chat about it now.
Well, I think overall I enjoyed it. There were some frustrating aspects, some frustrating areas. I feel like on occasion certain areas were too long or like felt so much longer than other parts that it was a little bit weird. Pacing wise, maybe not perfect, but I did enjoy it overall, I think. And I expect I'll only enjoy it more on my future playthroughs because your stats that you level up carry over into future plays. So that means, especially because I'm not going to change the difficulty, I'm going to stay on story that the enemies should be easier than my first time through because I will be stronger. So I like that, having
Oh,
a little
yeah.
bit of a leg up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was interesting. It was fun. It makes me want to replay Higurashi with you,
Yeah,
because it's, you know, there's certain signatures of this author I feel that are present in this game, and it probably wouldn't be obvious to anyone unless you've played Higurashi. Like, certain things or themes the author likes and brings back in this game. So it's kind of fun to have that knowledge. I'm curious how future playthroughs will go. I'm curious how much will change or how little, I suppose. I would like to see that, and I would like to see the other main endings just to, you know, round out my understanding of this game and what it's doing, and see if in the end do I really like the story it's telling, or if it's like, you know, not my thing. I don't know. So far I enjoyed it, but there's many open threads at this point, like things that are not resolved from the first playthrough. So, you know, for me, I enjoy Silent Hill as a franchise, so I would like to experience the rest of it myself. Except for like the UFO ending, I'd be happy to watch that on YouTube. I don't need to play through to get to that.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm curious. I tried to see if people have talked about the exact amount of difference between playthroughs because I want to know, is it like you're literally playing through the whole game as is with some added stuff or slight changes, or is it more of like a Nier Automata situation where I think, actually, I can't remember. I think the second playthrough is pretty similar, but then it gets really crazy where it's like very different, or maybe it's partway through the second playthrough where it goes very different. It's like not retracing the same steps. But my sense for this one is it kind of is doing all of the same stuff again with maybe some added things. I don't think it's like you skip like half of the game in the second playthrough or something.
Yeah, no, I'm expecting basically the same framework again.
Okay.
For no reason, I'm just expecting that.
Okay. No reason, just your gut. Got it. Okay, well, I'm excited to see more of the game too, but we also saw an event in a little Tokyo in Los Angeles. We happened to be there for something else we're going to talk about, a concert, and they did this like pop-up event. Konami did this, put on this pop-up event with Little Tokyo called Taste of Ebisugaoka. Ebisugaoka being the name of the town in the game. And it's a special collab running from September 25th to October 19th. So we just got the tail end of it. And you could go around Little Tokyo. They had like a big, I'm not actually sure what the statue was. I'm not statue, like, you know, the structure they erected didn't actually look really reminiscent of anything in the game that I
I think that's
recall.
already there. They just recolored it.
Oh, really?
Yes. I
Oh,
think there's
okay.
already something there at the
I
front of Little
see.
Tokyo.
Okay, because it was like there's not, it doesn't really scream like this is one of the torii in the game or anything like that, or one of the shrines. And, okay, so that makes more sense. But they did sort of put banners and things. They had the metro station right by Little Tokyo, had a bunch of Silent Hill banners. You could have gotten a Silent Hill F Metro card, but I guess we missed out on that. They went pretty quick. And then they had the little plants kind of hanging around everywhere, lots of decals on storefronts and things. And then a few stores were doing special collab menus or little experiences, which was mostly, you know, stuff from the game or like, what am I trying to say? Like statuettes and things that Konami probably sent them to put on display. But it was a really cute little thing. So I was quite happy that we got to check it out, even though we didn't really get to see all of it. For one, we both had to work. It was a Wednesday that we went into the city, and LA's, you know, not super close to here. So you got traffic, this and that. By the time we got in, at least one of the shops that was doing the collab was closed for the day. Then I found out the other one, Hypeland, which I was really interested in checking out because they had a bunch of statues in it. And one of the statues, which now I understand what it is because we've played the game, was of the Sakugo boss fight monster. That was at Anime Expo, and I did see it. They had a Silent Hill F booth at Anime Expo when I went in July, and you could like wait in line to have your photo taken with it. So I think they probably just sent the same one over there. But I was kind of interested to go check out the statues and things and take photos. But so Hypeland only open on Friday, Saturday, Sunday randomly. So that's pretty limited. So we couldn't see that, but we did see the exterior, which had big decals of Silent Hill F and the scarecrow monsters. And then we were able to get some food. So the first stuff we tried was at Cafe Dolce. They had the Arrabbiata, which is a, I'm trying to read here, a strawberry roti with strawberry marmalade filling and rose petals. So this was very sweet, like bun filled with strawberry jam kind of thing. And then the spider lily latte, which was a rose tea latte with rose petals. And both were fun. I mean, honestly, collab stuff, even in Japan, which is like the king for collabs, I feel it's more about the theming than the taste of the food. And in this case, I probably wouldn't have bought the strawberry roti anyway, because I'm not a huge fan of like sweet strawberry bread or jam or anything, but it was fine. Did you have an opinion?
It was okay. It was just like a jelly donut.
Yeah, basically. It was a jelly donut, very sweet. The Spider Wooly latte was nice. I like the rose tea. It was just not really the kind of thing I would normally order because I'm a coffee girl, but fun to try. Had a nice presentation with the petals and everything. And then we actually kind of stumbled into the other one because we didn't want to go super far out of our way. It was getting late and dark, and we had this concert we were going to. But as we were heading towards the concert, we ran into the other business that was a bar,
Far bar.
Far Bar. Okay. So we just happened to be walking by them. They had two big screens in the front, remember, that had the game being played. It was really funny. One of them was like sideways, so they had the whole game like, what'd you say, vertically. Yeah, that's what I want to say. So one was horizontal, like it should be, and the other was vertical. So it created a strange effect. But we popped in and ordered all of the items on that menu. It's like, since we're here, we might as well get it. So we got two drinks. They had the Divine Water, which was a absinthe cocktail that was quite strong, actually. And the Agura no Hotei-sama, which was their mocktail, and that was a pomegranate agua fresca. And the Ayakakashi, which was some kind of pork skewer thing with like a really strong salty sauce and pineapple and a glaze. Yeah, the sauce was like, they call it a red glaze. So honestly, I'm not sure what kind of glaze it was. And then it came with like some chips, right? So of these, which was your favorite?
I liked the non-alcoholic beverage the most.
Yeah, the pomegranate
Yeah, it
one.
wasn't tasty.
Yeah, I think we both agree that was our favorite thing of all the stuff we tried.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I liked the Divine Water cocktail, but absinthe isn't really something I go to, and it was very strong and just like very straight alcohol-y flavored, which was kind of surprising. I feel like usually when you have a cocktail for an event or like a special theme, they really go for sweet stuff, but this one wasn't really sweet. It was pretty bitter. And I'm curious how they came up with the idea, like, this is what the divine water is going to taste like. I don't know. It's just an odd choice. And the Ayakakashi, at this point, we had already had ramen for dinner, so I just tried a little bit and it was fine. It kind of reminded me of like sweet and sour chicken or something.
Yeah, I liked it well enough, but it wasn't anything special. I don't think I would have ordered it if it weren't for the fact that it was a Silent Hill collab item.
Yeah. But, still good that we got to try them and we got some pamphlets. There was, I guess, a sticker, no, stamp rally, but that ended. So we couldn't partake in it, but we got the little flyer, which is cute because they have like a map that's drawn in the style of the maps from the game and has some Silent Hill F branding on it. And oh yeah, we also went to, there's a game store, and I forget the game store's name. You know it off the top
It
of your head.
says
World
World
8.
Eight
Yeah, there
too.
we go. World 8. And they were like an official collab spot, and they had the Silent Hill F branding plastered all over the shop. They had a really cool press kit, which had the fox mask that the fox dude wears in the game and some cool stuff. And something really funny about the Silent Hill F posters that were all over the shop that you noticed. What was that?
Yeah, so the posters say Silent Hill F available now in big text. And then underneath that, in slightly smaller text, it says, buying or purchasing any digital products is a license.
Just so you know.
Yes.
Actually, they also had that on the bathrooms of the bar. Yes, remember, they had the Silent Hill F poster. It's not, what is it, like a decal? I keep saying poster, but it's like a full decal, like the full door of the bathroom, also with that text. Mm-hmm. Just so you know, Konami really wants you to know that when you buy or purchase a digital product, you don't actually own it.
Well, I think it's the law in California, you're supposed to disclose something. That's Valve or other storefronts have kind of changed the language around purchasing digital items.
Hmm.
With that said, it's not like it says buy it. It just says it's available. So I don't know if they actually need to say that on here. Anyway, it's funny.
It's very funny. It doesn't even say what platforms on the,
that
decal in particular. No. So I feel like if it maybe like had Steam on it, I could understand because Steam is a digital only platform. But in this case, it's like no information about it. You don't know what console it's on from this decal alone. So I don't know why they need to say that, but it's very funny. Just so you know.
Just so you know.
But it was cool to see all of the stuff in the store too. I liked the press kit. Made me a little jealous. I want one of those press kits.
I mean, yeah. I don't know what we would do with it, that big box.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we don't have space for it.
Some of the items were from Anime Expo or the same items.
Mm-hmm.
So we have those.
That's right. I did get some from the booth. It was like a cloth keychain or fabric keychain. Embroidered keychain. Is that what I'm thinking of?
Mm-hmm.
Then a pin with the spider lily on it and a logo.
A logo magnet.
Magnet. That was a logo magnet. Yeah, so some of that stuff we have. So we're all set. But the fox mask was cool. Anyway, I think that's about it for the event. Again, mm-hmm. we're posting the podcast on the 17th, so I guess it's the final weekend coming up.
Yes.
I don't know if they're going to be restocking things. Like, apparently they gave away stickers at some of the stores, but we didn't get any of that. And then they had the stamp rally and the Metro cards. All that seemed cool. But I think if we had made a special trip just for it, maybe I would have been a little disappointed. Even though, I don't know why, because it's so cool. And, like, if you have a themed event like this, it's like, so it feels so rare to do anything. That's like just having this amount of stuff is cool, but maybe it would have been a bit disappointing because it's like, oh, none of the food was that great. And if they had run out of all these things, I would have been bummed just to make a trip for it. But I'm happy we went.
Me too.
As for the other reason we were in the city, we went to see a concert.
Yep. Which is very close to Little Tokyo, like 5 minute walk.
Yeah.
The show, when you say concert, it makes it sound really big, like it's in an arena. I guess it's a concert.
Well, what else would you call it?
Okay, well, a show.
A live musical show at a venue.
Yes. Anyway, we saw the girl group Blusher. They're from Australia. This is the first time they've toured out of Australia. I think they only had 2 or 3 shows in the United States planned.
I know they were in New York and Seattle. I can't remember the rest.
Two or three.
Yeah, and they went to Europe a bit too. But yeah, they're pretty up and coming, I guess. They're still pretty small scale. They started a couple years ago, and I don't know how much touring they've even done. This might be the first tour.
They said this was their first world tour.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So anyway, we went to see them. And because they were near Little Tokyo, we decided to do the Silent Hill thing as part of this trip. But yeah, the venue was quite small. I don't know what you said, like max 200 people?
Something like that I saw on their site, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like a big room. And you just stand there and you get to watch and be too close to other people. But it was fun. It was nice to see them live because we're a fan of, you know, their discography thus far, I think. It's fair to say. So it was nice to see them live, see them perform and like just have a fun time vibing to the music with everyone else who clearly is also very much into their music. So that's always a good thing. Probably the smallest venue I've been to before. I think you said you had something similar before. So not new to you, but new to me. I liked it. I don't know how popular they are in the U.S., but I would like them to become more popular so that maybe there could be more concerts in the United States in the future so we could attend as well. But, you know, it was fun. I liked it.
Yeah, I'd like to see them, you know, get to do more stuff. Like when you go to see a Kim Petras or a Kylie Minogue, obviously they're pretty big. But even Dorian Electra, who we saw, had a bit more like theatrical elements to the show. This was very much like you're seeing, you know, a group that's at their very start, so they don't have any flashy stuff going on. It's just them kind of dancing and no crazy choreography or costume changes or, I don't know, all that kind of frills that happen with bigger concerts. So it was cool, but I would love to see if they were able to get more, you know, support so that they could do that kind of stuff. But they're very fun. Highly recommend giving them a listen if you like, what would you call it? Dance, pop, electronic, I don't know.
What are girl they? Groups.
Girl groups. But they're not like, are they mainstream girl groups? I would say they're like, if you like gay pop.
Okay, sure.
I don't know what the genre is. But yeah, very dancey. Club music? No, I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, it was fun. And yes, I have been to one other pretty small venue when I was in Japan a long time ago. I don't love being sardined in with people, especially when it's like, people are just dancing and they don't necessarily care about anyone else's personal space. But this is probably because I don't like go clubbing or anything, so I'm not used to it. But it was fun to go. And we're seeing them. Also really fun that like when we went in, they were right there at the merch booth. So if you had gone to the merch store to get anything, I think they would have signed it right there. You feel like people were just walking up to them chatting. We were sitting waiting for the show to start and like they walked by us like literally right there. And I know it's like, you know, they're not huge, famous, super crazy famous people. So maybe it's a bit silly to be like starstruck, but I was still like, oh look, there they are, you know.
Yeah.
There's something special about them being Australian too, which is funny because I didn't even know them when I was in Australia. So there's that. It was fun. Yeah. So that was our trip to LA this week for the concert. And then we got to do the Silent Hill event. And then randomly, the stars aligned and we had a second LA trip since the last episode we recorded. And this was for the Hobonichi Meeting Caravan event. So this is the Hobonichi Techo, which is a journal slash planner that I've been talking about for years, going on like 10 years now. This is the one that, if you're not familiar, Shigesato Itoi, the guy who did the Mother Games or Earthbound, created this company. I think they're called Hobonichi. I think that's the name of the company itself. And the company originally, actually I learned this at the event because I didn't really know the whole history, but it was more of just like a general lifestyle brand. So they, it's a company that curates things to enhance your everyday life, which is basically like Hobonichi means almost every day. And so originally it was a website for posting articles about various things that I guess he cared about as close every day as he could, but I guess they do post every day and they have different interviews and all kinds of things. And then they have a store where they sell different products that are, you know, supposed to be lifestyle goods. And then I think it was in the late 90s or early 2000s, as part of this brand, they created their planner, the Techo. And it's a yearly planner that's gotten like a, I don't know if I want to say cult following. It felt like a cult following, but it is very popular, so I don't know if it's cult anymore, but it's a very popular planner due to the nice quality of the paper, the thoughtful design, and then they come out every year with all these super cool covers that you can mix and match with the like physical journal itself, and then you pick the cover you want and put it over the top, and then you can customize it how you like, and it's a whole thing. So there's a big community around it. I started using them, I think I looked and it was 7 years ago. So I've been using them for 7 years. I've got like the big size, which is the original cousin, and then they have a smaller size called the Weeks that's like narrow and a weekly one. And just really into it. I love them and I love the community around it. And they do these events, which are called the Meeting Caravan, where they go to a different location and they have a bunch of Hobonichi users come together and talk about how they use them. So this is like an official Hobonichi company event. So staff from the company will come and chat with you, and then they'll do like a post on the website about it. So I'm always reading like what their little event recap is like and seeing what they were talking about and the photos and all that. So when I saw that they were having one in LA and I was available that day, I was like, oh my gosh, I could go. Me at an Hobonichi event. So you had to actually apply because they have such limited seats in the event. It's like a very small group thing. So you applied with like a, it was like a Google form or something, give them a little bit of info, like how long have you been using it? And I don't really remember what else. There wasn't a lot of questions, but there was some basic info, like, you know, what's your gender, how, what's your age range, that kind of thing. But luckily I was selected to go, so I got to attend and I had a lot of fun. There were only three other people, actually, no, sorry, three people total that showed up. So it was me, two other people, and then the two staff from Japan that were there. I asked how many people were supposed to come, and she said 6 to 8. So I guess that's an LA thing, that people like to cancel events. But the three of us had fun talking about our journals and sharing, you know, how we use them. And the Hobonichi staff took photos, and they chatted with us, and then they brought a bunch of stationery and things, and we got to journal together. It was just a really cute thing to do. And I'm so excited because it should be featured on their website at some time. So you can hopefully maybe see me or at least samples of my journal that they took photos of on this article on their official website. So it feels like pretty cool that I've been talking about Hobonichis for how many years? 7 years plus. And then I'm going to be on their website. Or at least the event I went to will be on their website. Whether or not I make it, I don't know. Anyway, I have a whole recap about the event. If you want to hear all the details and see some photos I took, it's up on my website and I'll leave a link in the show notes. Okay, so we do have a little bit of news we want to talk about today. So first of all, I'll let you, Marcus, kick things off with a bit of a bummer to start us off.
Yep. So, I don't listen to that many podcasts these days. I've, you know, listened to various ones on and off. But there's always been one podcast that I have listened to, the very first podcast I ever listened to, I'm pretty sure, which is Orange Lounge Radio, also known as OLR. They started in 2002, before podcasting really hit mainstream popularity, when it was a very niche thing. Before Apple had a podcast section on iTunes, you know, before many things they started. And to be fair, when they started, it wasn't officially a podcast. It was like a live internet show, but it was, you know, self-produced or whatever. It wasn't like it was a radio syndication. It was just like their own thing, this nerdy thing that they were doing together, talking about rhythm games, you know, all the things from Bemani, but especially DDR. So I started listening around probably 2004, and then I have been a listener since then. So it's a very long-running show, and it's always featured these three main hosts, and at some point they did jump off from just doing rhythm games to just talk about gaming in general, maybe some while a while ago. So they're just one of these fun gaming podcasts where you like the host and you listen in and they chat about whatever really, and you're happy to tune in.
You should note that they're weekly as well. So yes. It's every week, mm-hmm. basically. And didn't they pass 1,000 episodes and then they got on the Guinness Book of World Records for being the longest running gaming podcast or something recently?
Yes, I think either last year or this year, they were recognized as the longest continuously running gaming podcast with the same hosts. Mm, there's like some caveats in there because certain shows like continue, but the hosts rotate in and out or change, or maybe there's like a year hiatus or something that might happen. They never had a hiatus. OLR did, you know, certainly take days off sometimes, but it was never a hiatus. It was like, oh, you know, a week here or there that they might not have a show, but otherwise they were weekly and have been going strong for a long time. So I always knew at some point the show would end, but I was never really sure how it would end. But recently, during a live OLR, they finally announced that the show would be ending. It's 23-year run in November. So it was like shocking, but also the reasons they gave, which it's like, you know, they want to have time for other things in their lives, and that, you know, often reporting about gaming news is not fun because there's a lot of things that come with the gaming industry or the political side of the gaming industry and things related to that that makes it often very unpleasant to be like so inundated and focused on gaming news. It's just like a bummer a lot of the time. So I do see that if you're someone who wants to have a podcast about gaming news, you cannot really escape that. And that may not be something you want all the time in your life. So I fully understand why they're ending their run. It's saddening to me, but you know, it is what it is. And it was a lot of fun when they were around. All three of the hosts like do stuff online outside of this podcast as well. You know, doing Twitch streams and doing YouTube videos and things like that. So it's not like once OLR ends, I'll never be able to see any of them again doing gaming-related content, but it'll just be in a different context. So it's huge news to me. Probably not huge news in the gaming industry at all, because, you know, despite this long run, they've always had kind of a small niche audience. But I just wanted to share it because it's big to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's big news.
Mm-hmm.
You got me into them, and I've been listening for, you know, years now because of you. And we tune in every Sunday together, which is a nice ritual to have. It's kind of like, you know, Sunday's a bummer because you got to work the next day. And it's kind of a nice thing. I was talking to you about rituals lately, like about, you know, Taco Tuesday or Pizza Friday or whatever. And so it's like, or Sunday. But I definitely can understand. I can't even imagine doing the same thing every week for 23 years. Like, I get stir crazy. Like, we could barely commit to doing this every other week. And we obviously took a long time off and are not that serious, you know. But they're very dedicated to, like, covering all of the news, you know. Like, we never even did that. We did stuff that interested us, but I definitely think when you're just really hyper focused on, okay, we got to cover everything and we're, you know, reporting on what's happening and then talking about everything that's happening all the time, it can be a lot. And then just, yeah, generally, like, they're all getting older. They're probably all in their 40s, right?
Or 40s and 50s, yeah.
So older than us. And, you know, they have families and partners and wives. And, you know, at a certain point, you want to do things. And with your limited time left, you know.
Don't say it like that. Like, they're not that old.
Well, no. I mean, we all have limited time left. Yes. I'm saying time is an infinite.
Yes.
And, you know, you got to pick what you want to spend your time on. And if it's not the thing that's giving them the joy right now, then they shouldn't be doing it. And so I'm glad they made the choice and said, you know, we're going to stop this now and go do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, they'll all be around. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
but still sad.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. When I first started listening to them, I was still on dial-up.
Wow.
So that gives context for the time.
Yeah. Gosh.
Since then, I graduated high school, college, got a job.
Got married. Oh.
Wow.
Gosh.
A whole life, basically.
Yeah. Wow. Well, good for them for keeping it up so long and having a great run. And they'll be ending it with a bang, I'm sure. So there'll be a few more episodes airing through the end of November. So definitely check them out if you haven't before. Orange Lounge Radio, they stream on Twitch on VOG Network is the name of the account, right? Every Sunday
V-O-G
night.
VOG Network.
Yeah, VOG Network at 6 p.m. Pacific time is when they start. And we always tune in. And of course, they have a podcast feed as well if you want to just listen to it. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Sad to see them end, but glad to hear that they're making the choice themselves and moving on their own terms. Okay, and just one other news thing that caught my eye, especially because we have an upcoming Japan trip that we're thinking about. Square Enix launched this app. It's called Cat Trip, and the first one is focused on the specific location of Ueno in Tokyo. So the thing about this is it's a, like, puzzle game AR experience thing. You, like, buy a packet of information and documents from Square Enix Store and some other places. But it's, like, a physical thing that you have to, like, pick up or you get mailed to you. And you have to go to the physical location and do puzzles or activities and, like, progress the story of this game. So it's an AR experience that somehow has something to do with cats because it's very cat themed, but I have no idea from the materials they've put out so far, like, what the story is, what you're really doing. They say that it's puzzles, but even elementary school kids can participate and it's not too hard for, like, children, so it shouldn't be that hard, but really hard to gauge kind of what type of experience it is. But I'm very interested, and since, as I said, we will be going to Japan, I'm really keen to kind of check it out and see what it is. So we might have to pick it up because I really want to know. Like, apparently you also get coupons for places in Ueno, so I imagine it's gonna have you, like, go around and you know, one of the answers takes you to a restaurant and then you get a coupon for the restaurant or something. Like, I have no idea. It seems fun. So that's called Cat Trip Ueno, and I guess they're gonna be doing it for other locations around Japan. So I'm curious to see what they do, and maybe I'll look up to see if, like, anyone has reported on what it's like. Like, I'm sure the day it dropped, somebody solved it, and then they share, you know, all the answers online. But I'd be more curious to get a feel for, like, just what exactly you're doing or, like, what kind of puzzles they are. I just have no idea. I can't even imagine. Oh, and you need to have a Line account, the messaging app. So I assume that it will message you, like, the prompts or something. Anyway, very interesting thing for Square Enix to do. So I'm curious to check that out. Okay, and as for games, Marcus, I haven't been playing anything. You're the only one playing things now.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know why.
For some reason.
Take it away, okay. Mr. Gamer.
Yes, I'm a gamer again. So I started playing this game, and I'm probably almost through with it at this point because it's not likely that long. But I started playing Blippo Plus on Steam. You mentioned it to me as a game you think I would be into, and you were absolutely fucking right. I'm really into it. So Blippo Plus is a game just in the version Blippo was released for the Playdate.
Oh, I didn't realize the Plus was the new version.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I think the one on Playdate was just called Blippo.
Oh, that makes sense. I assumed it was always called Blippo Plus. Sorry for interrupting.
It's okay. Yeah, so Blippo on Playdate, Playdate being that little yellow handheld with the crank. This game came out for it. And then I guess they decided to also release it on Steam, which I think is good because the audience for Playdate is limited. So they released it enhanced or just kind of, I don't know, a fancier version on Steam. The game itself is basically almost like a TV simulator, in that you have like a menu of TV channels, and then you can click on and watch any of them. Each channel has its own like specific programming with specific shows that it airs. Each show is like maybe 2 minutes long, and so you'll relatively quickly see all of the content on the different channels. But the progression in the game is basically after you watch enough of the content, you'll be able to access more video content by getting the next data packet, as the game calls it. Will refresh all your channels with new episodes of the different shows that are available. As far as gameplay is concerned, I mean that's really it. You watch stuff and then you unlock more stuff to watch once you've watched enough. There's nothing really else to it. There's no challenge. It's more just kind of like an interactive fun thing, I would say, but I don't care. I really like it. I think because of the theming, it's kind of like presented to you as this alien television network that you're watching, which is very much like our world, except maybe in the 80s. So it's a lot of 80s themed or styled shows and content. And visually, it really gives that vibe. With the quality of the content, the outfits that people are wearing. It's all very reminiscent of that era, and it's a lot of fun. I really like the vibe. I really like what they're doing. It's probably not for everybody, but it's definitely for me. Like 100%, this game is for me. So, I think things that are also interesting about Blippo Plus is that it's kind of like when you look on Steam, it's got like three different developers on it. And looking into it further, because I'm like obsessed with this game, the primary creative people behind it, like the writers and stuff who came up with the concept, is the dance and music group Yacht, which is based in LA. They kind of wrote it all up and had this idea for this game or interactive thing. And then the video, all the FMV content was put together by Telefantasy Studios, which focuses on making 80s or otherwise retro styled video content. So they're cool. And then, these creative people got together with a developer, like a video game developer or like a interactive media developer, Noble Robot, to put it all together into a package that you could have that people could play. So overall, I think it's really interesting. I would like to see if Yacht would be interested in making any other interactive things in the future, or if this is like one and done. I think it's very fun. But again, it's, very straightforward, just kind of watching these little sequences, stuff like a news channel or a news broadcast or a weather report, a cooking show, a soap opera, these different little themed TV concepts, and you can watch and see multiple episodes. I don't love all the shows, but I like some of them. And the ones that I like enough to like not care if there's one that's like boring. I think it's very fun. I really like Blippo Plus. And you like it too, I think.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that, even though I'm not the one playing it, I'm getting pretty much the full experience, except for I don't have the clicker, so I can't click through the episodes. But yeah, I get to watch it, and I love the presentation, like you said, like the 80s theming, like even the menus, the, what is it, the channel, what do you call it, where they show you all of the things on the channel, the channel guide,
Yeah,
right?
the TV
Yeah,
guide
TV
thing.
guide is always really cool. Every time you load new episodes, it like changes the colors and patterns. It looks really great. And there's that one channel that the most interactive one where you can actually press through like different options to read messages and posts, like a message board type thing.
Mm-hmm.
That one, there's one in there that you keep commenting about how it reminds you of like an old Mac program.
Yeah. The visuals are very reminiscent of like DOS games and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's very nostalgic and fun for me to see that type of art, because I feel like when it comes to people making modern video games where they're like, I'm nostalgic for X era of gaming, it's like 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit, and now we're up to like PlayStation and Nintendo 64 nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
But like, and there, it's not to say there was no indie developers who ever did like DOS nostalgia, but it's not nearly as prevalent, especially now as people, mm-hmm. you know, as the age keeps moving along, it just keeps moving further forward in gaming history. So I like seeing this thing towards that thing, like retro PC visuals.
Right.
Like, yes.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know the ages of the people who worked on this, but I suspect that some of them that were, you know, behind the creative aspects of it are a little bit older, because it feels like you really need to have really understood like the aesthetic of those eras. Like, you know, I was talking to you about this because we're kind of discussing why we like it so much and why it does such a good job at it. And, you know, I wasn't alive in the 80s. I'm only appreciating it now. I mean, I wasn't alive at the end of the 80s, but I wasn't cognizant. And I'm appreciating like 80s and 90s stuff now as an adult through the lens of culture looking back on it, you know? Whereas, like, you know, you can certainly replicate things without having known it firsthand, but I feel like, you know, everything that's in this is done in such a really authentic kind of detailed, really, you know, eye for what was fun about these things that I don't know that everyone would be able to do. It has like, there's so much put into it. And like all the different channels are very reminiscent of a very specific theme and aesthetic. And, you know, like even the fashion one, it was just really fun. And I love the type of humor as well. I don't know if I can really describe it. I'm not good at describing these types of things, but it's like just very silly, quirky, like kind of meaningless humor, you know, like you mentioned the other day that they call coffee murk.
Yes.
And it's just like goofy and fun and I love it. Mm-hmm. So it's like have your cup of murk. And at first I thought like that was like a quirky way that they were saying coffee to be cute. And then you mentioned that, no, they actually, in this world, the aliens call them coffee murk. And, you know, they have things that, like, when they're cooking food, they have all these silly words for everything. Like, almost like Dr. Seussy or something. But then it's, you know, probably just like gummy bears that they're using to make it. Mm-hmm. But it's just so cute and fun and very earnest, you know, in a nice way. So I enjoy it as well.
Good. Yeah, I feel like, okay, just thinking about what you were saying, where often if people are presenting something in a retro style, it isn't necessarily very authentic. Like if you say to someone, tell me what the 80s, you know, give me some sort of visual of the 80s, people might say, for example, in regards to fashion, big hairdos, and that's true to an extent. But that's not all. But there's not like going beyond the mm-hmm. obvious markers of mm-hmm. the era.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, for example, one of the channels, the movie channel, has like the kind of commercials you would get because the, you know, hyping up the movies that would be on TV that weekend. If you were like maybe a teenager now, I don't know that you would even be able to understand or conceive of that, because I mean, a lot of people don't have TV anymore. They have Netflix
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or something to that effect. There are commercials, but they're not commercials. At least, I guess I don't know. I don't have Netflix. But I would assume the commercials you get are for like products. They're not for like movies that are on Netflix.
Oh, I think they do advertise. It's available now, though.
No, they'll show it. But I mean, like, if you have the Netflix plan that has ads, Do they have ads, the video ads, while you're watching your movie, then where they break it up for Netflix movies? Maybe they
do. Well, I don't know anyway. About Netflix, but on Amazon Prime, they definitely did. And I always thought it was stupid. I'm like, I already subscribed to you. What's the point?
I guess the difference there, though, is that it's advertising their content. But the commercials, as they used to be on TV, it's like, you need to watch TV at this time, Friday at 8 p.m. It's going to be on. It's going to be awesome. You better be there. Versus a commercial now for a movie, it doesn't really matter when or where or how you watch it. Anyway, I'm just trying to say, like, if you were too young, I'm not sure that you would even have ever seen a commercial, like, for a movie that's going to play on TV.
Mm-hmm. Or you wouldn't know about, like, the channel where it was, like, the sexy stuff that you would have to pay to see it, and so it's all fuzzed out until you've rented it.
Yes, right? That's another one of those things where... Yeah, there's probably not context for it now because most people, again, do not have TV anymore, at least like that type of TV. And yes, I don't know that there's such a thing on Netflix, certainly not. So, yes, the adult channels where you might be able to tune in and see a little bit of something through the static and the fuzz. Just like, it's so interesting and intricately done, and I like that. Mm-hmm.
Good. When, I'm interested to see, like, what happens when you see all the content. Like, there's a little hint of a story or, like, a through line. So, at some point, it needs to end because they can't keep giving you new content forever. So, I'm just curious to see where that happens and how it's presented.
Yeah.
Okay, well, in addition to Blipple Plus, you've been... powering through some demos in full gamer mode. So you want to share any of the ones that you've been playing?
Yes. So I played a little bit of the demo for Ball Pit. That game just came out this week. As of this recording, you can now buy it if you're so inclined. It is a game that's like Breakout, the ball, you know, the ball where you hit the things on screen.
You hit the things with the ball stick. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, whatever. It's like Breakout-ish, but it's also a roguelike. And I played the demo very briefly, and I was like, yep, I want this game, because I love Breakout. And it reminds me a little bit of Wizorb, which was an excellent game.
Yeah.
So I'm very much looking forward to picking up Ball Pit. I just haven't done so yet. Yeah, since there's a demo, I would suggest trying it if you're at all intrigued by the idea of a Breakout game with maybe a bit more to it. But yeah, I haven't bought it yet. And then for whatever reason, I was on all these other roguelike demos as well. I tried Mega Bonk.
The worst name ever. I can never remember this
Mega
name.
Mega Bonk.
Why is it called that?
I don't know, because it's funny.
Okay.
Anyway, this is a game that's styled after Vampire Survivors, but if Vampire Survivors was in 3D and not a top-down 2D game. So that has its pluses and its minuses. One, it's kind of unique after playing a fair amount of Vampire Survivors to see a game like that, but with a different style. And it's fun to play. But it's also quite difficult because of the nature of it now being a 3D game, because now you have to manage controlling the camera in addition to controlling your character. And, you know, if you've ever played Vampire Survivors, it's a very hectic game. It gets really crazy, you know, the longer you survive, there's enemies everywhere, bullets everywhere, things happening left and right. So... to have to control the camera as well is like, in the little bit that I played, it was doable, but I could quickly see it becoming very challenging because you wouldn't be able to navigate so well if you also have to consider that factor. In addition, because it's like a 3D world, I feel like I'm running more into like rocks and trees and things than in like Vampire Survivors. So I don't like that. There's also the factor of, like, speed in this game. It's like if you're going downhill, you'll get faster and faster. But if you're like running into rocks and stuff, you'll like slow down because you're running into rocks and stuff, and then you'll have to like regain your speed.
Oh.
To get to whatever your max speed is. So that's annoying because it's just like, I wish I could, you know, navigate better in this stupid 3D world so that I could keep up my top speed. But when I'm going so fast, it's easier to run into these things and easier to like misjudge how I want to angle my camera to do things. So like in my demo playing, it wasn't that bad, but I'm sure if I were to play this game enough to get to the really difficult, challenging areas, that I would probably start to become really frustrated with the game. So I think at the end of that, I had fun with my demo, but I'm probably going to put the game down and just go back to Vampire Survivors because Vampire Survivors is very good. And I have a lot of DLC that I haven't tried yet.
Yeah, that's right. Like all of it. Have you tried
like
it?
All of it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And does Mega Blanc have multiplayer?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, there you go. Vampire Survivors has that multiplayer mode that we like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't realize that about the speed aspect. That's interesting because Vampire Survivors, you're always going the same speed.
Yeah,
your
max speed.
Right? Yeah. I think you can get faster, but yes. Like you're always a constant speed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's confusing.
Yes. So that's Mega Bonk. Fine, but I'm not going to buy it. And then I also tried Clover Pit, which is a name I keep forgetting because it's not, I don't know, it doesn't help me understand what it is.
It doesn't sound at all like what it is.
Yeah, so Clover Pit is a game where it's a roguelike, but the roguelike aspect is focused around playing a slot machine. Some people have compared to Balatro because, you know, that's like poker or whatever. So this is your slot machine roguelike. The pit aspect comes in because if you don't earn enough money at the slot machine, then you'll be dropped down a pit.
Oh. Okay.
And so again, like these other games, as you play, you gain access to like perks that will give you special abilities. Like maybe you'll get more luck. Or you could like say you want more bells on the slot machine screen so that you can potentially get more rows of bells or whatever the icon is. Or you could say you want to get more 777s or whatever. There's a lot of these perks that come in that you can use to help you get more money on each of your slot machine pulls. And I see what's going on there. I think it's neat. And I really like slot machines. Like, not in a real way. And like, not in a way where I go to Vegas and gamble my money away at slot machines. I just really like slot machines. Like, if we had one in this house, I would just be pulling it all the time.
God.
Just because I think it's so fun. With no stakes. I just really enjoy slot machines. The aesthetic of slot machines and, like, actual physical usage of them. Sadly, a lot of the slot machines that exist now, they don't even have the pull mechanism anymore. Now it's just a button. And also, they're not real. They're, like, screens.
Yeah.
Instead of the mechanical spinning wheel, which I love so much. So, anyway, I'm
learning this about you. I didn't know you were that excited
about
them. Yes,
I really love slot machines.
Okay.
But this game isn't really doing it for me.
Uh-huh.
So I'm probably not going to buy it either. Just because I feel like it doesn't feel quite as fun. It seems like, and I'm sure it's not, but when I was playing it, it felt like it was really just kind of dependent on luck. Luck of the run that you're doing and getting items that you can use to build the right stuff you need to be able to make enough money on the slot machine. Because it's very much very rigid. It's like you have 3 tries at the slot machine before you get dropped in the pit, and if you don't make enough money, that's it, you know. And so I feel like it's kind of too much dependent on the luck of what items you'll get in that run. It's not like, you know, every run could potentially be a winner. I feel like there's probably some runs where you're just gonna, no, you can't. Like, it's just not giving you the stuff you need to be able to win. So, I think it's just a little bit maybe too simple. And so I will not buy it, even though I love slot machines. So, you know, it is what it is. I like at least that they all had demos available so that I could try them out. Otherwise, I would have bought all of them.
Yeah,
probably. And then been like, oh.
So you're saving money.
Yep.
Thank you, demos. So out of all of them, the one that you want to get is Bull Pit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Not Clover Pit.
No.
Not to be mistaken with the other Pit game.
No.
Well, I'm glad you're having fun with them. I guess I don't play games anymore. I'm a fake gamer. Well, I've been watching you play Silent Hill F, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So I'll usually sit here with the guide and kind of guide you through to make sure you don't miss any important items. And, you know, when you get frustrated, give you tips. So I'm helping.
You are?
Yep. But in addition to playing things, we've also been watching things. We've been continuing the Vinegar Syndrome clear out of the collection you've amassed, focusing on horror since it's coming up on Halloween. And you've got to watch horror in October. I'm just going to quickly run through all of the titles we watched, and then we'll give our thoughts. And some of them aren't even really worth chatting about. So we watched Flesh for Frankenstein, Cemetery Man, Cthulhu Mansion, and Evil Laugh. Now, I know we both were pretty unimpressed by Cthulhu Mansion. It was just like...
I don't even remember.
It was a weird one. It was like a guy who was a magician, and we kind of poor production values, but this magician man got involved in these kids who were like going to sell cocaine. And I don't even remember how exactly this happened, but they were at the like fair that he was at, and their cocaine sale went awry. So they wanted to steal his car, but they kept him at gunpoint and made him take them to his mansion, the Cthulhu Mansion.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not even worth talking about. It is,
yeah, no,
you're
I,
right. It's boring.
Okay, well, there you go. It's boring. It also didn't make any sense. And I thought there was going to be more like monster stuff, and there really wasn't any.
No, there
so,
wasn't.
Okay, there we go. It's over. We're getting rid of it. One that I wish I liked more was Cemetery Man. It was an Italian film. It had a really cool Italian name, and now I don't remember it.
Yeah.
But it had, like, a fun aesthetic. It was about a guy who was a cemetery caretaker, I guess, and the dead would come back to life, and he'd have to kill them again. And it had a really fun opening sequence where he's, like, half naked, and he picks up the phone, and he's killing zombies, and it really gave Devil May Cry opening vibes. Like, maybe the first game, but there's one where he's in, like...
Devil May Cry 3.
Was it 3?
Well, really? That's when he's, like, got the pizza.
Yeah, got the pizza, yeah. And he's on the phone, yes. And maybe fighting.
Yes.
Okay, 3 then. Anyway, really reminded me of that. Obviously, this came first. But that one was also weird, and maybe weird in a way because I just didn't get it. I don't know. There was a lot going on. It was like a comedy, kind of a dark comedy. There was this woman who he fell in love with immediately and wanted to marry and be with forever immediately because she was hot, and they had sex in the cemetery, and she was horny for what? Was this the thing called?
I don't know what it was called. Some
it's
sort
not
of
a mausoleum,
yeah,
but something
some
like
sort of
it.
Crypt where there were all these dead bodies.
Yeah, she got really excited about that, but then she died. But then she came back to life, like all of the zombies. But then he felt sad that he had to kill her again. But then he saw two other women over the course of the movie that looked exactly like her because it was the same actress. Fell in love with them and then had problems with them. And then all of these other problems. And in addition to this, he had like an assistant who was someone who just said nya or nye the whole time.
Yeah.
And he had a little side plot where he fell in love with this girl who then she died. There was just a lot happening, and a lot of it didn't really make sense to me in terms of the meaning. And then at the end, it got very existential. And, man, do you have any thoughts on that one?
I thought there were parts of the movie that were really fun, and I wish it was more just about the fun and playful and weird stuff and less about trying to be like making some sort of statement.
Yeah, I think it was. Like, yeah.
Because the statement, I feel, is one where it's like, if you're a teenager, you're like, damn, that's so deep. But if you're like our age, it's like a little bit eye-rolly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know. I didn't see this movie back when I was a teenager. If I had, I probably would have been like, wow, best movie ever. I just wish it was more fun and less focused on trying to say something maybe not that important or deep. I would have just liked the weird and fun stuff that was going on.
Yes. The weird and fun parts were the best part of Cemetery Man. Mm-hmm. But we decided to keep it because it was weird and fun in some parts. I don't remember.
I think we kept it, yeah.
Okay. Another one we kept is Flesh for Frankenstein. This was one that Andy Warhol was involved in, right?
Yes, to an extent. And I think sometimes it's even called like Andy Warhol's Frankenstein or something.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
Paul Morrissey and Andy Warhol like worked together on a lot of stuff. Mm.
And so Blood for Dracula is another one that they did after this, right? This is the first one. And it's, of course, about Dr. Frankenstein. And this one was pretty fun, pretty out there, but I really enjoyed it. I don't even know how to describe it. I'm trying to describe it. So the guy wants to, of course, make his perfect monster, and he's like trying to find the final parts. I think one of my favorite bits was that, so there's a man that's working for Dr. Frankenstein and his wife, who like live in this big mansion castle thing and have these big grounds. And one of the men that works on the grounds is like fooling around all the time, having sex on the job. And like the wife keeps finding him, you know, in the hay barrel with some girl. But then there's another worker who like wants to become he wants to join the church.
Yes.
So he's like, you know, man, I think I'm going to join the church. And the other guy who's like just all horny is like, no, you got to at least have sex once before you do that. Like, it's great, man. Come on, I'll show you how to do it. And the guy's like, okay, yeah, sure. And so, so they go to have sex in a brothel so that this guy can experience it before he becomes a member of the church. And Dr. Frankenstein and his assistant are going to this brothel because they want to find a man who's all horned up, because if they use the parts from this man, then he, when he's reawakened as a monster, will want to have sex with their female monster that they created. So it's very important that they get a horny man. And through a series of silly mishaps, they end up getting the man who wants to join the clergy, who is not all horned up. So it's just very silly, but then also kind of grotesque in parts, and then some weird, you know, incest and things going on. But overall was, you know, a coherent story, had some fun concepts, some weird imagery, and is very like stylish, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, is very memorable film.
Yeah, I liked it. I think it's funny to see it now. I feel like at the time it was released, probably a lot more of a scandalous movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But seeing it now, it's just like, this is so stupidly funny and weird. But it's like, yeah, I could see this getting a cult following. I mean, I guess it probably already does. When Vinegar Syndrome released it, it had a very nice, like, really big special edition release with a book and like two versions of the movie, because there's like a 3D version for some reason. But they really, you know, put a lot of effort into that release, so I'm sure there is a cult following. But it's kind of interesting because I think about it and I'm like, Rocky Horror Picture Show is another Frankenstein related thing, and that is like, I think, more mainstream big. It would have been so weird and interesting if this was the movie instead of Rocky Horror, because there's a lot of quotable lines and you could see people acting it on stage. I mean, there's no singing, but you know, it has a lot of similar types of content or concepts and could very well be a very easy midnight movie. But in the end, it did not. Rocky Horror became that movie. But that's awesome. You know, Rocky Horror is awesome. So I have no complaints about that. It would just be like, this would be very interesting if that were the movie instead. But I think maybe it's a bit too much.
I was going to say, it's probably just too intense, like too graphic, a little bit too sexual, a little bit, you know, too much of all of it. Whereas Rocky Horror isn't quite over that line.
Yeah, it's more, Rocky Horror is more pure camp. Mm-hmm. This is campy too, but it's also a little bit like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you know, you've got like children and kind of morally bad situations when you don't. There aren't any children in Rocky Horror, are there?
No.
Yeah, don't think so. Yeah. Anyway, so I could see why it didn't, but I agree with you. Like, it has that quality to it. It was very fun.
Mm-hmm.
So recommended.
Yes.
Basically. Out of all the ones we talked about so far, that's my top recommendation. The final one and the most recent one we watched is called Evil Laugh. I don't know why it's... I mean, I know why it's called Evil Laugh, but I don't know why the villain's whole thing is that they have a quote-unquote evil laugh, which is not evil at all. It's just like, the whole time. But they never go into why they laugh.
They don't.
It's a really campy, low-budget horror movie that I think was surprisingly fun. I enjoyed it. It's like one of these, bunch of college kids go for a weekend away and then get in trouble. But the whole premise is that one of them, are they all medical students, but they almost seem like they're all part of like a, fraternity or sorority. Because it has that vibe. They're like weirdly close-knit in a way that I never was with any friends in school. But anyway, they're like maybe a close-knit medical school. And they all have like weird interests in eating hearts. As in, like, for fine cuisine. Like, it's not weird at all that they want to eat, a pig's heart or whatever for dinner. But one of the guys is looking to buy a house. And so he's inviting all of the friends over to the house for a nice weekend there. But his real goal is to have them help him fix it up, right? Like, so he's going to buy it and then they're going to clean it up and make it really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And, get all these young people together and they'll do it really quickly. It was the goal. But we as the viewers find out that he's like killed in the first 2 minutes of the film. And so all the friends come show at the house and they're all wondering where he is. But then they stay anyway. And then, bad stuff starts happening. And it has like the really famous out of place cleaning dance number in the middle of the film, which was very fun.
Yes.
So they're all having fun while they're cleaning the house, waiting for this guy to appear. And then the killer, spoilers for Evil Laugh, if you're wanting to watch it, don't listen. But the killer turns out to be the wife of the real estate agent that wants to sell the house. But she was the mother of the man who was originally the owner of the house who abused children or something like that.
Was accused of abusing children.
Oh.
But it was actually not true. The children were lying. But he was killed or committed suicide because of...
So the kids were really lying? I didn't actually
catch
that part.
That's what they said, yes.
Who said?
Someone said.
The mother could have been
lying. Someone said. Okay. Anyway, whatever the case may be, he died.
And she's mad. Yes. But my favorite part of this one, maybe not favorite, one of my favorite parts, I like the dancing scene a lot, but they include a horror movie fan character who's like the nerdy guy, but he's like so insufferable to an extreme degree. Like sometimes you have the nerdy guys in films or nerdy character. It doesn't have to be a guy. And I'm like, I would have been friends with them. Like everybody makes fun of them, but they're cool. They're not that bad. But this guy is that bad because he's just a dick. And like, there's one scene where a couple is going to go have sex. And you see before they go into the bed that a hand sticks up with a knife. And you're like, what, is this really the killer? And we're like seeing a preview, or is it something else. And it turns out that it's the shitty horror movie loving guy, like, playing a prank. And he actually grabs the guy's ass while they're having sex. And he's under the bed the whole time while this couple is having sex on top of them. And he says this to freak them out as a joke. And I think he's just a perv. And it's just an excuse to be a perv. But so he does all these shitty, dumb things throughout the whole movie. And at the very end, he and this other girl survive. And he plays a shitty trick on her where he makes her think that he's the killer. And so when he, like, reveals, hey, it's actually me, haha, isn't that so funny? She's like, fuck you, and kills him at the end. And mm-hmm. I love that. I love that he got what he deserved for being a jerk. But yes. So I've spoiled Evil Laugh. Sorry, everyone. I assume you're probably not going to watch it. But it was fun. It was surprisingly fun. It's worth the experience. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So we had some duds and some good ones. As always, I feel like it's a mixed bag.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Vinegar Syndrome is not known to be, like, the pinnacle of cinema. It's just, like, here is a bunch of movies that for some reason or other, maybe sometimes because they're really bad, or other times maybe they're hard to get the licensing rights for or something, or otherwise just kind of lost because they were just not, you know, that important. They weren't Criterion level. Mm-hmm. But some of them are still pretty cool, pretty good. It's just, you never know. You never know what you're going to get.
Yep. And since we've got, you know, a couple more weeks in October, and a lot of the stuff you have from Vinegar Syndrome is horror anyway, but we'll keep up with the horror until Halloween at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, I think that's all we've got for today's episode of Pixel Pixel. Thanks so much for listening, and we shall see you again in 2 weeks.